This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, the second part of our month-long focus on education. This time, teachers are in the spotlight.
So, Shift 4 in the Malaysian Education Blueprint promises to transform teaching into the profession of choice. First up, we look at where we are on that. Then, we discuss what we can learn from other countries.
So tell us, what is needed to convince more people to become teachers? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08 and you're listening to Inside Story. So as we've been saying, our month is going to really be about the Malaysia Education Blueprint 2013 to 2025 because we are well on our way towards the blueprint, towards all the things that the blueprint is supposed to achieve. And today we wanted to focus specifically on one of the shifts that the blueprint was targeting, which is Shift 4, and that was to transform teaching into the profession of choice.
I think just saying that itself gives you an idea of the challenges, right? Because profession of choice, if you go out and ask people whether teaching really is a profession of choice in this day and age, I would bet you that most people would say no. Or they would think of it as the thing to do if you can't decide what else to do, none of which to say I think that that's deserved, but I think it is a problem. So essentially what Shift 4 focuses on is to raise the entry bar for teachers, to be basically to make sure that those who become teachers are amongst the top 30% of our graduates. That's a pretty lofty goal, I would say, a good one, but a lofty one. They also talk about revamping our teacher training institutes to become world-class institutions by 2020, to upgrade the quality of continuous professional development for teachers, and to focus teachers on their core functions of teaching. Essentially, I think, to strengthen the thing that they're meant to do instead of all of these administrative tasks and all the other things that they sort of get saddled with along the way. Other things that are included, implementing competency and performance-based career progression by 2016. So we should already be on our way on that, technically, as well as to enhance pathways for teachers towards leadership, to master teaching, and to become subject specialists. Finally, to develop a peer-led culture of excellence and certification and a certification process.
So all of that sounds good. And I think the main thing, the main takeaways that I have is that it looks as if there is a focus on an improvement of standards overall, but also career progression of deepening skills. And I think the real question here is whether or not those things are happening, because while we are looking at this idea of making teaching the profession of choice and we think about what it is that most of us would want professionally, and I'm speaking very generally, but you want to feel that you're doing a good job. You want to know that you're meeting the standards of said job. You also want to know what the career progression options are going to be. These are all things that are very basic. You want to know that you are going to be provided training and support of some kind as you progress, as you take on more leadership positions. And at least based on what it is that we hear from teachers on the ground, it does not always appear that this is something that is actually happening. And I think it's a very tricky thing whenever we talk about teaching, because there is always this acknowledgement that there might be issues when it comes to standards, for instance, but there's also an acknowledgement that not enough support is provided. This is very, very clear, at least from the outside looking in. And so I think when you say, look, we want to make teaching the thing that people now want to do again, I worry that we're far away from that. I don't know, but it feels like it. The other thing is, the other dissonance that exists here is most people will acknowledge the importance of teaching. It's almost like acknowledging the importance of being a parent. Like the roles are something that everybody knows. These are very important. If you want to shape future leaders, if you want to have a better country, if you want to have all these things in place, it starts at home, yes. And then it's strengthened and built on in schools. So it's a weird thing. It's a very weird position to be in, knowing that teaching is a very important profession and yet also knowing that not enough is being done to support that important profession.
We mythologize this role of our teachers so much, and with very good reason. They play such an incredibly important role without necessarily wanting to do the work to make sure that we continue having good teachers. I find this conversation about we don't have good teachers to be a real chicken and egg one, because on the one hand, do we not attract great people to the profession because we're not doing enough to keep them there? But on the other hand, when we don't have good people in the profession, the impetus to provide what we should to keep them there is also lower. So it's such a tricky situation. I'm glad this plan, the blueprint, acknowledges that and has put into place some clear, I think, marks to hit. I'm very curious to see how far we are along on that.
That's the theme, isn't it, of these check-ins with the blueprint. So we want to know, what is needed to convince more people to become teachers? What do you think? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Alina Ame, CEO and co-founder of Aris Academy. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. And today is the second of our month-long focus on education that we're doing on Fridays, specifically looking at the Malaysian Education Blueprint, specifically today looking at Shift 4, which is supposed to transform teaching into the profession of choice. In line with that, we're asking you, what is needed to convince more people to become teachers? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And to talk about how it's going on the ground and what it's actually like at the moment, we're crossing over to Alina Ame, CEO and co-founder of Aris Academy. Alina, welcome to the show.
Hello, Lynn. Hi, Sharmila.
So, we're in the ninth year of the blueprint. How well do you think it's actually served us?
Okay, to me, I think the Malaysian Education Blueprint is a great document that helped us chart out the gaps in the education system. It helped us set a vision for our education system to aspire to be. In that sense, the document is comprehensive, it's ambitious, and it's very inspiring. However, having said all this, a clear aspirational vision is not enough without charting a clear, realistic path on how to get there. So it's not enough if there is no collective understanding and buy-in of where we're going. It's not enough without proper support and empowerment at every level of implementation. So this blueprint, for most people I know, is simply a great document.
So our focus today is on teaching and teachers. Overall, how do you think the teaching profession is perceived in Malaysia?
So generally, there is a perception that the teaching profession is a safe, stable career choice. We don't generally hear people talk about the teaching profession as a profession that is highly competitive or require highly skilled individuals, like one of an engineer or a doctor, for example, even though teachers are given the responsibility to shape, you know, the knowledge and experiences of our children. So even within the teaching profession itself, we look at teachers differently based on where they're teaching: preschool, primary, high school, urban, rural, public, private. So a school with an international staff, for example, is probably seen as aiming for excellence more than one that is not.
So part of Shift 4 in the blueprint was to transform teaching into the profession of choice. This is what we keep hammering on about. How are we actually doing on that front?
I think there has been a few efforts to transform teaching into the profession of choice. If we were to look at the step-by-step in the blueprint itself, we've done bits and pieces of everything that's being listed on the list. So, for example, providing on-the-ground coaching for teachers by experienced senior teachers to support them in their work. They had coaches for school leaders as well to improve school leadership, to show that there is support to help you grow professionally. They rolled out One Bestari Net back in 2013, I think, as part of upgrading infrastructure, which is today a no-brainer. Internet connection is one of the most basic need in any working environment. So we do see bits and pieces of what is in the blueprint being implemented today.
So the plan also is to raise the entry bar for the teaching profession, right? To be from the top 30% of the graduates. Is this feasible?
So I think it's important to ask, what do the top 30% of graduates want in a job, and is the teaching profession meeting their needs? So what about becoming a teacher that is a better choice in terms of compensation, in terms of professional and personal development, a supportive, creative, innovative working environment to be in? What does a teacher career path look like, or even how would a larger community perceive me as a teacher if I choose this path? So these are needs that have to be addressed. And I'm not sure if the teaching profession at the moment is filling the needs. So we might have people who started off teaching or wanting to be a teacher out of passion and wanting to make a difference. But it also requires a system and a teaching and working environment that can sustain this passion. So recruiting excellent educators is important, but retaining them is how we will sustain an effective system.
So with that then, what are the main barriers when it comes to attracting people to the teaching profession?
I honestly think that the main barrier is the work conditions. And when we talk about work conditions here, the issue is almost never about the children. It's not uncommon anymore that people often talk about the teaching profession as mostly being clerical work, that the working environment is stringent with small opportunities for innovation, lack of acknowledgement in comparison to the effort put in, that the infrastructure is lacking, classrooms are overcrowded, teaching materials aren't enough, really long working hours, or even just a vague career path. So these are not inaccurate. This happens, and this is not enticing for people looking for a career.
So among people that you know, are there people who want to be teachers?
There are people who want to be teachers. I was a teacher once. But they're not making that step to be a long-term teacher. They speak about wanting to be a teacher to gain an experience, but they don't speak about wanting to stay on in the system for long. So for example, when I started teaching, I thought it was going to be forever, but I was working in an environment that wasn't supporting what I wanted or aspired my students to be, or what kind of teacher I wanted to be in the school environment.
You know, one issue that always gets brought up, really always, is salary, pay. Do our teachers need to be paid more?
So in terms of compensation, if you were to compare, teachers are currently earning salaries which are comparable to those working in other public or private sectors in the country, like lawyers, accountants, IT execs. I think what is more important is to acknowledge the hidden cost of being a teacher, of buying your own teaching materials, printing worksheets for your students, classroom materials, reference books and the likes. This come up from the teacher's own pocket. And you don't see this in other professions. You don't see this, you don't hear engineers having to go to a shop to make printing or make copies of their work. And it's not just the ringgit and cents, it's also the extra hours spent on marking books. I remember stapling exam papers for hours, lesson planning, reporting, and so on. And these are really the hidden costs, not so much of the compensation in terms of salary.
So you mentioned the burden of the clerical work and then all of these things that you bring up as well. What is the solution here? What needs to happen structurally to address those things?
I think this has been discussed many times and have been brought up by teachers, has been brought up by previous ministers about providing teachers teaching assistants, where then teachers can then spend a bulk of their time focusing on developing effective lessons in the classroom. Not so much for clerical or reporting, but really understanding the needs of their children. And this takes a really long time. Adding on clerical work, reporting, co-curricular activities, not to mention managing parents and the community, that's really extra work on top of what is expected of them.
So while we're talking about, and I mean, this was something you mentioned earlier, this idea of qualification. There have been several ideas put forth on requirements for trainee teachers, with an education interest group calling for trainees to have at least 7 A's in the SPM, for example. What do you make of this?
I think with any professional career requirements, academic achievements should not, and I'm sure it's not the only requirement that is important. I think that having it in as part of the filtering process doesn't hurt, but I'm hoping that equal noise and demand would be in place for all of the other important requirements that make an educated grade. And this includes interest in wanting to work with children and communities, interpersonal and communication skills, their analytic and problem-solving skills, 7 A's in SPM doesn't necessarily show this. So I'm not big on like going all out with, oh, you have to have a 7 A to be a teacher, because there's so many other things that is required for you to be a great teacher. And I think it's a little bit too easy to say that the best and brightest of our people comes from those who achieve a certain number of A's.
So another objective of the blueprint is to elevate our teacher training institute, so the Institute Pendidikan Guru, and to elevate it to world-class standards is what they said. Can you tell us what this means? How are these standards measured?
To be completely honest with you guys, I'm not too sure about this either. But by the definition of the blueprint, it looks at what the teachers are being trained in and at what level. So updating the teacher training curriculum to probably meet the needs of the changing industry. The blueprint mentions that teachers will receive more training on how to teach higher order thinking skills. That IPG is going to offer various levels of education certification. So we're expecting to see more teachers holding a degree, masters and PhDs. And this also applies to the qualifications of the lecturers in IPG. But I think personally, more importantly to me as a country and a system, regardless of what the world-class standard is, where do we want to bring our teachers to? Does a world-class standard really matter at this point? What is our vision as a country of a great teacher? What are they supposed to be capable of? What kinds of teacher actions do we want to see in the classroom? And how can we then build backwards from there? And I'm sure this is already part of the thought process somewhere, but at the moment, to me, it's not very clear what this vision of our teachers look like at this point.
So in line with that, right, we spoke earlier about how educational qualifications really shouldn't be the only thing or the be-all, end-all. What kinds of qualities or skills do you think we should be looking for instead?
So just looking at the recent pandemic showed that our education system was not as resilient as we hoped it would have been, that our teachers were lacking skills in adapting faster than they should. And this is not to blame teachers for. We were not preparing them for all of this. Moving forward, we need to create a system where we empower teachers to be able to adapt, to be able to innovate whenever, whatever emergencies that may happen to our education system. And this requires teachers to be very innovative with your art of teaching, must be able to use technology to teach as well, must be able to be data-driven with the approaches that they take on.
So RS Academy, of course, provides training for teachers. Would you be able to walk us through the process of that?
So yes, we do. At IRIS, we believe that the teaching profession is one of the most challenging, inspiring, and important profession in the country. So our teacher training focuses on empowering our educators, instilling the belief that they are capable of change and creating change within their own classroom. So even before jumping into the pedagogical or technical aspect of teaching, we acknowledge and reaffirm the importance of their role and playing their role well. So teachers first need to believe this before they are able to grow. And as much as we put our students at the center of our work, our teachers need just as much support and encouragement to do well. And whenever we do training with our teachers, we want to ensure that the teachers believe that they are able and capable of doing this. And that is why with any training that we run, creating a strong network of teachers who can be each other's support system is an important element in our program design.
Alina, we just have a minute really left with you. What message would you like to leave us with?
Okay, so I think in the blueprint, it mentioned somewhere that the quality of a system cannot exceed the quality of its teachers. And if we truly believe in this, an equal amount of focus and investments need to be put into making our teachers the best they can be in the classroom.
Alina, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That was Alina Ame, CEO and co-founder of IRIS Academy, talking about Shift 4 in the Malaysia Education Blueprint, which was supposed to be about transforming teaching into the profession of choice. And we addressed there, I think, some of the real-life barriers that exist within that aspiration. And we'd like to hear from you, right? What is needed to convince more people to become teachers? Is it a profession that you would consider for yourself, for example? Call us, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. And today we're talking about transforming teaching into the profession of choice. And if that sounds lofty, that is because it is actually shift 4 in Malaysia's education blueprint, which is what we've been focusing on and will focus on for every Friday in November. And in line with that, we've been asking you what is needed to convince more people to become teachers. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we do have a caller on the line with us. We are joined by Kuma. Kuma, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hey, hi. Good evening, Lynn and Sharmila. The way I look at it is, if we really want to attract the best, right, or those people, number one, you need to be passionate about what you're doing. Secondly, the compensation has to be attractive enough, you know, to attract the best. Because I believe if your basic knowledge, right, or theory is weak, how can you teach our future generation to do their best, right? And the other big stumbling block I see is in the government service today. Majority of them, is what our previous, you know, guest had actually mentioned. She said that they're there because it's a stable job. It's a last resort, right? They take that job because of that, right? So, are we attracting the right talent? I don't think so. That's why we see a lot of private schools, you know, growing in Malaysia. That's one of the reasons, right? So I think the compensation plan has to change. Number one, we need to attract the best. 20 years ago, Korea was down in the doldrums in terms of ranking. Look at where they are today. It's because they did a major overhaul of their education system where they attracted the best. And when I say best, it's like as equivalent to doctors and engineers and all that, right? So I think that's where we are really lacking. We can have all the blueprints we want. It's not going to do any good, right? Yeah, that's what I have, yeah.
Kuma, before we let you go, you know, did you ever consider going into the profession yourself?
Let me tell you this. I'm very happy in the private sector. I will never let my daughter or my kids be a teacher today. Honestly, it's not attractive enough. Look at Singapore. Singapore has a very good reward system for their educators. That's a very good example. We need to pay for performance, right? People don't perform, they need to do something. If we don't make that change, we'll just have this. People are just enjoying the ride and just like the typhoon or tornado can come and they will never change and we will never change and we'll still be at the bottom of rankings. Denial is still, you know, people are still in denial. You can have all these slogans, it ain't working. I just see that. I'm very frustrated what I see. I'm not going to go back into that profession. I never considered. Neither will I ask my daughter to do it. Yeah.
Kuma, thank you so much for calling today.
All right. Bye.
So, you know, it's interesting that Kuma brought up Singapore because that's actually our next segment. It's almost like we planned it. I promise we did not. But because we are talking about convincing more people to become teachers. And we usually, in the course of our interviews, ask what it is that we can learn from other countries. We thought today we'd look at our neighbours. So in the meantime, keep those thoughts coming. What do you think is needed to convince more people to become teachers? Is this something you considered as a career? Building off of Kuma's point, is this something that you would encourage your children to go into? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're joined by Professor Lo Yi Ling, Dean of the Academic and Faculty Affairs and a Professor of Education at the National Institute of Education at Nanyang Technological University, Singapore. Prof, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So walk us through what's been done in Singapore to ensure that you are getting quality teachers.
Sure. I think I will focus on the three major points, which is recruitment, preparation, and retention. So in terms of recruitment, I absolutely agree with the caller in that you do need to attract the best and the brightest into the profession. And perhaps I can just humbly share some of the strategies that we've used in Singapore in the past couple of decades. First of all, the cutoff to enter teaching is the top 30% of each academic cohort. Now, this is further made more stringent by entry into what we call the Teaching Scholars Program, which is highly prestigious, which is really only offered to those academically in the top 15%. However, as he has also rightly pointed out, it is really not just about academic grades, but whether you have the attitude and aptitude and the passion for teaching. And how do we determine that? We do it through a selection interview that is chaired by either a current or recently retired principal or vice principal, a Ministry of Education personnel, and ourselves from the National Institute of Education forming the panel. And a further 1 in 8, as noted by McKinsey and Co, are successful after the interview. So after you cull and you do the math, really you're looking at the top 10% entering into teaching. Secondly, he is absolutely right in that competitive remuneration is extremely important. Although I'm very happy to share with you that in my research studies, 85% of our teachers surveyed entered teaching because of altruistic reasons. That would be love for children, love for knowledge, love for passing on the love of knowledge to others. And the remuneration is competitive in the sense that it is equivalent at the beginning point to beginning accountants and engineers in the civil service. So we try to ensure that we attract top talents, reflected again by not just academic results, but also people with the right attitude and aptitude for teaching. I'll stop there for a while so that you can probe a little bit deeper on other points that you would like to for me to elaborate on.
I have to ask this. Did Singapore face problems related to this in the past? And what was done to improve the system?
Yes, I'm sure that right at the beginning, we had our challenges, and this is undeniable. Those of you who have followed Singapore's history very closely in teacher education, we have just celebrated 70 years. This is our 71st year of offering teacher education at in a very, very deliberate way. But I think the challenges were multiple. When we were post-independent years, for example, it was very difficult to get people into teaching. And I think the major shift for Singapore, if I may, from the perspective of someone who's practicing in the area, I'd like to say that the major shift really was what we call the universitization or professionalization of the teaching profession. When the National Institute of Education became part of Nanyang Technological University, which is a research-intensive university, the idea of placing teacher education and preparation within the academic confines of the university immediately uplifted the status of teaching. So that, I think, was a very major turning point that the government took. Secondly, I think I would also like to talk about the very fact that every teaching candidate has their tuition fees paid for, as well as a monthly stipend as they undergo pre-service teacher education. I think this is an extremely important ingredient of our success, so to speak, in terms of attracting the best and the brightest into the profession.
So I want to combine a number of the points that you've brought up, because professionalization as well as attitude and aptitude. And I think that earlier on, we spoke about the romanticization of teaching as a profession, this idea that, oh, you're born to it. You're a born teacher. And I think that surely that can't be the only thing. And so when we're talking about things like attitude and aptitude, how is that actually built into to the training or to the spotting of or to the recruiting of teachers?
Sure. I think that is a very sharp question. In fact, I think on the MOE board, the Ministry of Education board, we do have trained psychologists who really are there to look at, you know, the dispositions of the teacher. Nowadays, we also have what we call the micro-teaching component, where teachers are asked to enact a small sample of a lesson to see if they have dispositions for teaching. I have also personally sat in some of these interview selection panels, which are extremely rigorous. And one of the things that I look out for could really just be attitudinal. For example, if I say, have you read about our program? What do you know about it? If they say, oh, sorry, I don't have time because, you know, I was like, you know, I'm just like just serving NS and I really didn't have time during the weekend. I was very tired. And, you know, things like that. Or I test them by saying that, do you think that teaching is a profession that has a lot of holidays? And that's why it incentivizes one to enter into teaching. So those who have a real understanding of how demanding teaching is, especially in the light of the current pandemic, will be able to tell you that it is not true. So these are some of the, you know, proxies, I'd say, of attitude and aptitude that we look for. But in terms of our pre-service teacher education program, we do believe very strongly in building a very strong sense of teacher identity or teacher pride into the program. This is because teachers who are proud of becoming teachers are shown in the international literature to be A, likely to stay longer in the profession. In other words, it predicts teacher retention. And secondly, likely to contribute back to growing the next generation of teachers for the profession. So these are very important elements within our program that we call the values-based education component of our program.
So one thing that's come up a number of times during the throughout the course of today's show is all of the other things that teachers are often required to do in addition to just simply teaching, the administrative work, the clerical work, and so on. What goes into creating an ecosystem that supports them through this?
Okay, that is indeed extremely relevant, and I do not deny that. In international studies, administrative workloads has always been raised. It is not unique to either Singapore or Malaysia alone. Many teachers that I've interviewed in my research studies have said that we love doing what we do, which is to face the classrooms, to see that sparkle in the eye of every student. And that keeps me going, because I actually did a study which, instead of trying to ask them why they're leaving the profession, is to say, what has made you stay all these years? So we do realize that administrative workload is something that all teachers face. And I think one of the things that we have tried to do is perhaps to listen to the ground. And for example, our Ministry of Education introduced Parents Gateway in 2018. And this is a means of sending out e-consent forms, for example, digitize some of this really, run-of-the-mill kind of administrative work to free up more time to do what teachers do best, which is to teach and to pass on the love of learning to the students. We also have in place, for example, teaching assistants who are not full-fledged teachers, who can be assigned to teachers so that they take care of the admin side of the house.
We're speaking today with Professor Lo Yi Ling, Dean of the Academic and Faculty Affairs, a professor as well of education at the National Institute of Education at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. And because we're talking about how to improve the teaching ecosystem here in Malaysia, as well as attract more top talent to the profession, we thought we could just take a page, look at other examples from around the world. And we'd like to hear from you on this point. Basically, what's needed to convince more people to become teachers? Is this something you've considered for yourself? Is it something you would encourage your children to do? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back to continue this conversation after this. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:52. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about how to transform teaching into the profession of choice. And we're closing our show really by taking a look at examples from other countries, specifically our neighbour Singapore. And joining us to talk about this is Professor Lo Yi Ling, Dean of the Academic and Faculty Affairs and a Professor of Education at the National Institute of Education at Nanyang Technological University. So, Prof, another thing that has come up both in our messages as well as from our earlier guest, is this idea of continuous improvement, of training, of career progression, basically. And could you talk to us about how that's provided in the Singaporean context?
Definitely. I'm very passionate to share about this. I think that Singapore is one of the few jurisdictions in the world that I've studied, the other being Ontario, Toronto, where we have developed three career tracks for our teachers or our education officers. So there is the teaching track for those who truly love the classroom. They can eventually grow in terms of being promoted within the teaching track and go on to influence larger groups of teachers. So beyond being a teacher, they can go all the way up to becoming a principal master teacher, where you are really based at the academy and you're in charge of the professional development of other teachers. The second career track, which is always deemed to be very prestigious for some reason, is the leadership track. So some teachers who have the aptitude or have shown and displayed potential to lead are then given intentional milestone leadership programs so that they can rise up the career ladder, as it were, to take up leadership positions, first as heads of department and then as vice principals or principals, and even going on to cluster superintendents and divisional directors at the Ministry of Education headquarters. And the third track is the senior specialist track that we've seen gaining a lot of traction in recent years. So teachers, like any other student, is someone who is committed to lifelong professional learning. And we have lots of opportunities for our teachers to upgrade themselves, to pursue even a sponsored master's and doctorate programs at their own time and own target, and eventually come back to serve in areas of need and specialization, either in curriculum or specialist branches within the Ministry of Education. In this way, by developing three unique career tracks for our teachers, we hope that we can retain them career long because they can realize the aspirations, even though they are in a career called teaching.
Where does leadership come into all of this? You know, at different levels, school level, ministry level, and so on.
I would say that just as teachers determine the quality of the education system, I do believe very strongly that school leaders especially determine the culture of the school, as well as the culture of how teaching and learning takes place in school and the empowerment that teachers face. And this is something that all the research has shown, my own personal research has shown, especially in a book that I've co-authored with Professor Linda Darling-Hammond and Professor Lynn Goodwin on empowered educators in Singapore. School leaders are everything. And that's something very interesting. We do not leave it by chance. We do make an intentional gauge about a teacher's potential using something called the current estimated potential. And when teachers are nominated to take up leadership positions, we do not throw them into the deep without any training whatsoever. They do come back to the National Institute of Education for milestone leadership programs, be it the Management and Leadership in Schools program or the leadership program known as the LEP, Leaders in Education program. So leaders are considered to be very important because they shape the culture of each school.
So when we are beginning to talk or think about uplifting, empowering the teaching workforce, where does that start? You know, how can we get that going?
Okay, I think that it is very important that there needs to be systemic alignment. And I think a lot of people have asked us to reflect about the Singapore story, as it were. I think the minute we say that we are successful, that is when we're going to start failing, because the real truth is, no system is successful because you always have to be building on improving and enhancing your system and learning from others around the world. But to me, it is really about systemic coherence and long-term goal alignment of the system. And there is also something that is quite unique to Singapore, which is fidelity in the implementation of initiatives. I think all of this together makes it very possible for Singapore to achieve what it has. But let me also state very, very truthfully that Singapore is a very small country, city, nation, state. And in that sense, we are very unique. So it is very easy to make changes. Because if you compare us to the United States, for example, we are really only one of the 52 states, for example. So it is difficult to kind of transport the whole of the Singapore system into a larger context. But we can think about scaling up pockets of excellence from state to state, for example.
So we just have about a minute left, but how can governments apply best practices taken from other countries into a local context?
Okay, that's a very, very good question. In fact, I think many governments have also approached us to ask us, and I personally have participated in work on initial teacher education reviews for the Welsh government, for the Australian government, for example. And the first thing that I say would be to do a needs analysis. It is very important to understand what the needs are in each unique context. Secondly, and I think Singapore is very good at doing this, you do need to do a local and a global environment scan. This can be within the realm of education, but beyond. You do need to look at the trends because even as you and I speak, COVID-19 has changed the way that we live, work and learn overnight and forever. None of us could really plan for this. So truly speaking, there is really a need to, first of all, examine what the needs are. Secondly, contextualize it for the context that we are all working within. And only then do we really sort of say, what are some of the good practices from other jurisdictions that we can realistically implement with fidelity within each of our unique education systems.
Prof, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Professor Lo Yi-Ling, Dean of the Academic and Faculty Affairs and a Professor of Education at the National Institute of Education at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, telling us basically how our neighbours do it when it comes to encouraging teachers to join the workforce. Now, we've been asking you that very question. What is needed to convince more people to become teachers? Is this something you've considered yourself? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.